starting to out there, Flynn McLaughlin?
Pardon me?
Should we be on a page that has a bio about Dr. Flint McLaughlin?
That is correct.
Yes, that's right.
Yes. We used to announce bios and everything at the beginning, but we just put that there for your, you know, obviously there's more detailed CVs and so on, but we just put that there if anyone's interested. In the meantime, we thought it would be more important to talk about the content, so we just pasted it. I'd like to get started. And to do that, I want to, you know, our topic is email capture. And to begin, I want to review some prior research and then tie it into two recent research projects and some discoveries that we've made regarding email capture. So I'll kind of reference that report and some tables and then move into the next section. And I began a report some time ago by saying if Shakespeare had been a internet marketer rather than an Elizabethan playwright, he would likely have posed Hamlet's question in different terms, to pop up or not to pop up, that is the question. And all humor aside, it is the question that many marketers struggle with as they try to capture more email addresses. Will a pop-up window simply annoy your prospects and reduce your repeat visits, or how much of a difference will a pop-up prescription window really make on your email sign-up ratio? And are there ways to reduce this approach's obnoxious factor? And more importantly, and something we'll talk about later, is it really worth it when you recognize that any page that has a pop-up window is disqualified automatically by Google? And so with that in mind, you know, the first question, before we really talk about how to execute a pop-up properly and some new approaches to email capture, why is it so important for the web marketer to capture the email address of his site visitors? And I want to talk about that by showing you the impact of email capture and on a very small campaign. You can obviously take these numbers and multiply them and see what the results might be for you depending on your advertising budget. But let's look at a chart in your notes right now titled The Top Paid Search Engine Campaign. It has item Campaign A and Campaign B. If you look at this, in Campaign A, there were 10,000 click-throughs, and the same in Campaign B. Cost per click, 0.50 on average. Conversion ratio, 1.5%. Customers, 150. Average sale, 39. Immediate sales, 5,850. Now, we assume that Campaign A had no email capture in place. And by the way, you'd be surprised how many major marketing groups we speak with who don't have email capture, or worse, they have a tepid email capture form stuck somewhere on the page that really is pulling less than 5%, sometimes less than 2%, sometimes less than 1% of its site visitors in terms of sign up. It has the word register your name for special tips or things of that nature, which is absolutely antithetic to most who would rather not give you their personal information, especially when there's no incentive that makes it seem worthwhile. We see it regularly. And then the other component that we see is we see people who capture email addresses this way and have done it long enough that they finally got a list of several thousand names, but they don't do anything with it consistently. And they don't recognize what an impact it's making on their marketing budget. Look with me at this table again. Email capture ratio was zero on Campaign A because they didn't have they had no capture in place. Campaign B captured 10% with a well-incentivized capture. As a case in point, we find that an email capture form will typically pull 5% plus, between 5 and 15%, depending on how well it's done. But 5 is a good number. 5 is respectable. I'd like to see it higher, and I have seen it much higher. But 5 is still a respectable number. Email capture addresses then at that ratio was 1,000. Additional customers, these were mailings over a period of 120 days, 30. Additional sales, 1,170. And you can see the difference in revenue if you go straight down to the total sales. Cost remained the same, except for whatever, and this isn't precisely accurate because there's obviously some cost associated with sending the emails, but it's a very minor cost, and it was just to make a point that this table was created, 5,000. Sales 7,020 on Campaign B, which is an increase. And if you look at the difference in gross profit, it's remarkable. And the bottom line in this scenario is that campaign A was an unprofitable search campaign using the pay-per-click engines, but campaign B netted 238% more than campaign A, and the difference was in the email capture. Now, that's a significant number, and I think it indicates what I have seen over and over again in my studies, that capturing email addresses is a fiscal imperative. And I might deviate here from my notes and just simply tell you this. We have tried too hard to make the Internet fit the model that we brought to it when we came, instead of asking ourselves, what will the Internet do for us that we could not do on the in the brick-and-mortar world, and not just by looking for improvements in how we perform retailing or wholesaling in the brick-and-mortar world, but reframing the entire question. There is an amazing way to capture, glean data, and micro-test everything on the Internet that you cannot do in the brick-and-mortar world, A. B, there's an opportunity to build a sustained relationship, which you can never do in a store. People come in, people walk out. You don't have any chance to talk with them unless they make a purchase and opt for your mailing list. On the Internet, it is much easier to capture and win somebody's right to communicate back and forth with them via permission. And we miss it. I believe capturing email addresses is a fiscal imperative to most companies, and I believe that many of them could spend just marginally, just a bit more in their marketing, and practically speaking, it's almost, it's just a fraction of what they spend on their search work and get significant results. But before we rush off to implement that kind of campaign, there are some questions we have, or some points we need to define. Number one, an email capture program does not necessarily mean that you have to publish an article-based e-zine. Now, I mention that because the average bid to get someone to give you your email address is tepid, and one of our rules in site design is the prospect being sufficiently incentivized for everything you're asking. And often it is the incentive is not strong enough. Now, I have seen retail sites promise to do a e-zine or some mail-out specials or these types of things. People don't want the typical wording that says, you know, we'll mail you out special sales, and that translates into junk mail for most, and so they say no, and your email capture goes very low. On the other hand, if you promise to mail content, many e-zine or many retailers get outside of their core skills and are not able to deliver consistently quality content. And it's better to do nothing than to do the job poorly. So the question is, are there other reasons, are there other ways that you can capture email addresses? One of those is sweepstakes. Another one is low-price clearance alerts, and this has to be done in a credible way that is both real and feels real. The other is the type of how-to information. For instance, we're working with a group that grew. I could never tell you where they, but they grew from 27,000 the first month in our research, which we built within a Yahoo store, to over 130,000. And they retail accessories for a certain type of technology, and so they are putting together a series of informational articles that appeal to those people who buy that technology. It's useful for them. Another one is industry data. And there's another one that, you know, a very strong one that we've worked with before that I won't get into right now, but called Low Price Survey, and that can be very useful, and it's something worth talking about or thinking about. I move on. Step two, an email capture program does not ever mean that you just send out periodic sales offers. If that's all that you have with it, you're leaving most of the money on the table because you think that you're thinking that the email's job is to notify people instead of to build a relationship with potential long-term customers. Now, there's exceptions. There are businesses where perhaps that's all you do and there's no customer loyalty and you'll never get one purchase and that's that. But that's a rare business. The reality is email should be used to extend and build relationship. You use email to create a set of expectations, and then you use email to fulfill that set of expectations. And in doing so, you establish a relationship with trust. So An email capture program always means that you're requesting addresses from quality, voluntary, or permission-based signups, and it has very little in common with bulk email or list purchases. We do not do bulk email or list purchases right now. And I'm not saying that they can't be done. I'm just saying that I'm so suspect of the addresses that I'm afraid to do them. So having established, using this previous research, the fact that email is and email marketing is useful when it's done particularly as a reaction to people who visit your site and it's done in a quality follow-up way, I'd like to turn to our latest research on this subject and talk about two simple scripts for a new pop-up window that maximizes email capture and minimizes annoyance. And to accomplish that, I'm going to kind of lay out these scripts and let you see samples of those, and we'll talk about them and we'll get Cliff involved, and you may have some questions regarding implementation, and so we have the expertise on the phone, we hope, to help you. Is there a way to acquire the benefits of an email capture pop-up window without incurring its potentially serious liabilities? On certain sites, an email capture pop-up window will reduce conversion ratio off the home page if it's done incorrectly. Is there a way to use a pop-up window on your website without Google rejecting your AdWords campaign? Web marketers have the same problems when it comes to pop-up windows, but the issue is a critical one, as an email capture pop-up can double the growth of your list. I want to show you what we did in a test where we used a site that was identical in every respect except for the addition of the pop-up window. And if you'll look at the chart that's in your notes right now, during the period in week 1, week 2, and week 3 with this very small new site, which, by the way, when we started they were very small. Now they're number one in their industry. They have over 5,500 events. And they're the largest site and the most traffic in their niche. But in the beginning, this is what we discovered. Week 1, 37. Week 2, 42. Week 3, 44. By the way, they have the largest e-zine list now in their industry also. This is how it started, though. Total, 123 members. Look at the next table underneath that. Compare the weeks, and you'll notice that in the second table, this was done with the implementation of a pop-up window, total 232. The difference is that, depending on how you word this correctly, the second table reflects the fact that the pop-up window captured 190% of the subscribers that the site did without the pop-up window, even though, by the way, it had a really high-quality, attractive, well-designed, in fact, we were the ones that carefully designed it, email capture on the home page, in the iPath, up in the upper left side, right where it should be. Pop-up made a difference of that significance. Now, these pop-ups are good because they achieve this, and but the question is, how do we use them? And so I want to talk about this in the findings section from our research. And the first solution is rather unique. We developed it. We've been using it successfully, and it's new. The second solution is talked about on the net all the time, but I hardly ever see it executed correctly. And so we're going to talk about both of those. And as we do that, I'll lay out four points, and then I'm going to take you to the link, and then I'm going to let Cliff jump in with us. Okay? The first solution feels like a pop-up. It works like a pop-up, but it is actually a JavaScript rollover. And here are the key points. The rollover is anchored either to graphics or to text in a key location in the iPath on your site. Number two, when a visitor's mouse inadvertently passes over the anchor, a small box materializes. You can see a sample in just a moment, the site we're going to take you to. And here's the key point. Because it is not a true pop-up window, it does not violate the rules of Google AdWords and can be used on your primary landing pages. To demonstrate that, let's go to the key link. Brian, tell us the number.
For the actual code?
Yeah.
Number 4 on the list?
Go to number 4. Okay. So read the link to them also, Brian, if you would, and we'll be moving there now.
Pop-up and rollover scripts, number 4 on the list.
Now, as you may have deduced, these notes that I'm working from will be released in a full brief this week, along with links to this site for our members. And you should be pulling up right now a page that has two sets of code and a demonstration. I want to go to the first one, sample email capture tools, and it says rollover trigger. If you take your mouse and slide it over the rollover trigger, you should see a script pop up, a JavaScript pop up that is actually just a rollover. But we control where it lands on the page, exactly where it comes up in the page for presentation purposes, and it's designed to capture an email address right there. Is everyone finding that?
Yes.
Okay. We are using this, and I want to show you. You can use your back button. Go to marketingexperiments.com. One way that we use this is if you go to marketingexperiments.com, the whole home page, which you can do by clicking up there on the brand at the top of the page. As you scroll down with your mouse button over the phrase "What is marketingexperiments.com," you will see a pop-up window that comes up right there. It's not a true pop-up, but you'll see the rollover. That is one way that we use it effectively. We are also using it in conjunction with our individual briefs to take them to the offer page for a lab membership, and it's working there quite well. So I find them quiet, polite. They don't use any system resources. You know, they don't stick around when you've closed the page. They have a different tone than the standard pop-up that jumps up in your face. And so I would suggest that you may consider this rollover. Now, I'm going to turn it over to Cliff to talk about, hit your back button and go back to the script page, if you would. You'll trigger a pop-up there, likely, which you'll want to close, and we'll talk about that in a moment. But let me have Cliff talk a little bit about implementation and the code. And Stephen, you on the line? Stephen Wincoop. Okay. I think Stephen's one of our research partners who is very likely just implemented this also on his site. And if your phone is muted, Stephen, and you want to jump in, feel free to do that. Cliff, go ahead.
Okay. If you look at the top there, you'll see the rollover trigger for it. And if you've already rolled your cursor over, you'll see it pop up an example of it. Besides the view source code, CSSP layer. Layer is a term used for Dreamweaver exclusively. CSSP is the actual what's going on, and that's a combination of JavaScript, CSS, and so forth, and HTML. Below you see on mouse over JavaScript code. In there, what you can do if you wanted to is you can just copy the code out of that window and copy it into a text editor or a HTML. And be able to go work on the code from there. Now, if you plan on doing this by hand, you'd have to have more advanced knowledge of an understanding of JavaScript and CSS in order to do this. I built this particular thing with Dreamweaver, and I'd recommend Dreamweaver. In fact, I can put up some extra notes here, right? It has some good resources, a book, some extensions you'd need, which I'd used on our pages to help build this and so forth. Extensions are, Dreamweaver's an open source product, so they make it extensible so that you can add functionality to it. So I'll save that. And if you refresh your blog page here in just a moment, it's rebuilding currently. If you take a look at it now, and if you refresh your page in the blog, you see some additional notes there because some of the notations weren't in this JavaScript. JavaScript is the first one on the on mouse over JavaScript code. That would go in your head tags. I would highly recommend, though, that you put that in an external JavaScript file and call to it using a link inside your head tags so that when search engine spiders and what have you go down the page, they're not having to try and crawl a bunch of JavaScript and have a possibility of timing out or not crawling your page properly. The second one is that the actual CSSP, which would be going to your HTML code, and it's comment to begins code for membership rollover. And you could take a look at that and also copy that and paste that into a text editor or an HTML editor and modify it according to your needs. And you may have some questions about that. I don't know how in depth.
Do we have any, I mean, some we may need to answer by email, but does anyone have questions about what Cliff is talking about right now? Are there any questions?
Where is the extra notes?
The extra notes, if you refresh your page right now.
On which page?
In the blog, it would be the...
The original notes that have my bio on them.
I'm in the editor back end, so... It'd be the research log that you logged into.
Yeah.
If you refresh that page, you should see another entry there. Top.
Okay, I think I missed exactly.
Yeah, it is there. I see it. Posted January 24th. If you go to the research log, same page where my bio was at, and you hit F5 or refresh your screen, you'll see a new entry above the notes that talks about the rollover implementation.
Yeah, I see the...
Could you give the full URL, please?
It is www.mecgroups.com/MEC_research_log.
/.
Yeah. And if /. And if you have any problems, email support, and someone will email you a direct link to these notes to make sure you have the support at marketingexperiments.com. We'll provide you live during this conference any, if you've got a question that you need in terms of a link, just let them know and we'll help you. This is the on-mouse JavaScript code. It's not that complex. It's a bit complex, but it's worth it. It's a really powerful tool, and when you implement it correctly, it's a great addition to your war chest. So I want to keep that page open, and we'll come back and look at it as we talk about the on-exit pop-up. But I just want to talk to you a little bit about the on-exit pop-up right now. And
I just interject one thing.
Yes. Yeah.
Also, that first set of code up there, the mouse over, on mouse over JavaScript code, there's some things that will tie into your body tag that's not included. But if you looked in the example, if you pull the source code on that page you're looking at, you'd see what's in the body tag for triggers and so forth in JavaScript coding.
That confuses me, Cliff. What do you, are you saying that they need more than what we have pasted in here?
Yeah, on the... on the page example page, sample email capture tools.
Yes.
In the body tag, there's several things that need to be added to the body tag of the page.
Are you going to add those right now then?
Size and on resize problems and so forth when you use this kind of stuff.
Okay, please add that with clear notes for them, if you'll do that, just to make certain sure that there's no question. Okay? If we have any more examples, if we need to add it there or add it to our instructions, let's make that real, real clear for them.
It was, excuse me for interrupting, but there was also you had made mention about how to lay the code into the page so that it didn't time out and cause Google search problems. And what was that referenced in that?
This rollover trigger does not qualify as a pop-up, and
yep.
So it shouldn't give you any trouble with Google. It doesn't give. We've never had any issues with it with Google. So in other words, this first one with the rollover trigger is something you can put on the landing page in a Google campaign. You shouldn't have any trouble. I would recommend that you don't make it too large or obtrusive. You can control the size of it and all of that. I would recommend that you keep it clean, simple, polite, and you can also build it as we have, where it has a little X up in the corner so that people can close it and get it out of their way. Even if you do the way we did it, we in the example, they generally don't close it. They'll just leave it up because it's not covering anything they're trying to read. And that's kind of a smart way to do it in terms of, keeping the exposure there and also keeping the aggravation to a minimum.
Lynn, may I ask a question?
Please.
There are some people out there now that say on pop-ups you should also include something about your privacy policy. And I
yes.
noticed on the example you have here, you don't have anything listed. Is that something you would recommend?
Yeah, in fact, if you saw it on our, if you went back to the example on our page, this pop-up was created by our tech group, Cliff's and his group. But if you look at our actual pop-up that we're using on our page, it mentions precisely the same thing. Privacy is an issue. Conversion is typically improved by a statement about that. If you, when I went back to the homepage just now as you were talking and looked at the one that comes up for us, it says we never share your info and you can unsubscribe at any time. That's what ours says. I know the standard phrase, we value privacy, is okay. I don't think it's as strong as a statement like the one I just made in terms of its impact on conversion, but I think that's a very good point. And in fact,
The question also remains for a pop-up that size, example of the rollover pop-up.
Yes.
Where would you place, would you actually place all of those words in there, or would you place a link on the privacy policy, just the word privacy policy and a link to another page?
I would not do that. I would not just have privacy policy in a link to another page because you really don't want them to go to that page. You need to make a short statement, even if it's as short as we value your privacy, and then have the word privacy linked to another page. But if you don't say what, if you don't emphasize your value on privacy, then everyone has to go to that page in order to feel that little sense of safety that they're looking for. Give it to them without making them go there. Have the page as a backup for people who need more.
Thank you.
Were you trying to talk, or did that answer your question?
Thank you very much. That answered my question.
Excellent. Okay.
Doesn't a pop-up take away that sense of privacy right away as soon as something pops up?
Well, I don't think it takes away a sense of privacy because it doesn't mean that you have anything personal information of there. You know, privacy would be more connected with what personal information you've collected. I think there are two things that minimize the aggravation of a privacy policy. I'm sorry, of a pop-up that are very critical. You might even say there's three. The first is the form of the pop-up. Is it obnoxious? Is it pervasive? Does it get in the way? When I say pervasive, does it keep popping up? Does it, you know, pop up at the wrong time? Does it block what people can see? It's rude. You know, if it's rude, that's the first thing. That's the form of it. The second thing that can make a pop-up aggravating is the tone. If it's in-your-face sales hype, it's just like meeting somebody who's rude and obnoxious and loud. You don't like them. And candidly, a website, people do not buy from websites, people buy from people. Your website is a personality. A bad pop-up gives the person that you're trying to sell with, gives a bad personality to the sales professional that's meeting people on the internet. You have to think of your website as a person, and you have to make your website a person that you would like, the average person would like, or else you're going to get in trouble in terms of your conversion ratio. So the second thing is the tone of the message. And the third item that can make a pop-up obnoxious or can reduce the obnoxiousness is if it offers something truly helpful. I mean, if you offer a pop-up with a white paper that's useful, and if the topic of the white, if the white paper doesn't, if the white paper feels like it's, hey, I just made this, threw something together so I could get your email address, that's not the point. But if it's valuable, if it has, you know, if it has a 26-step recovery plan for server crash, you know, I don't know, things of that nature that truly seem useful and that are specific, is a service. So I think it's like a lot of things, you know, not to bring gun control into the issue, but obviously we use guns in good ways and bad ways, and we can do the same thing with a pop-up. And both can be politically incorrect as well.
So then are you saying that the pop-up could have nothing to do with your website? It could just be something that's helpful to the person who's at your website?
Well, I think that you know, if the question is, if it has nothing to do with your website, what is it there for? And I think also that it works better if the pop-up is related to your product but not your product. Let me give you an example. If you sell widgets and your pop-up is a sweepstakes to sell a free widget, or let's take a different model. Let's take subscriptions. Let's suppose that you have a subscription site and you offer a pop-up that offers a free drawing to win a subscription to your site. It's a mistake. Because basically people who might sign up will now wait to see whether or not they win. On the other hand, if your site is a subscription site for, let's pick a topic. Let's suppose it's for a subscription site for search engine information. Then you don't want to do a pop-up that offers a trip to Hawaii. Because you're going to get everybody entering that contest that has no interest whatsoever in your product, and you're wasting your email and your time. Your best way is to offer a product that is not your core product but related to it and useful. And make sure it's useful. People don't want to get any false expectations out of your site. So let's suppose that it's a pop-up that offers you a great and your search engine site, and it's a pop-up that offers you, you know, this great new free report on how to set up, Google PageRank's 21 ways to improve your Google PageRank if you have dynamic pages on your website. Now, the fact that you have dynamic pages would probably reduce the appeal of this to the audience who does not have dynamic pages. But I'll tell you one thing: if you do have a dynamic page, you'd be downloading that white paper. Fact is, if you're smart, you'd pay for it. Give it value. Make it something somebody would buy, or don't give it away, because you're not giving anything away then. When you tie all that in, you put a pop-up together that's useful, and that, you know, adequately incentivizes the people who you're trying to develop a relationship with, and so that makes a difference. Any other questions?
I have one, Flanton. This is Mike Koenigs.
Okay. Yes, Mike.
What I'm curious about, and obviously we'd be talking about my company site. I don't know if I should mention it or not.
Go ahead. You can. If you're all right,
well,
Mike.
The company's Rebyte. We sell it's a $150 card that plugs into any PC and turns it into a network-attached storage device. And right now, we haven't been capturing subscription information. We generate quite a few leads daily and quite a few dealer leads, which is really what we've wanted to do. And our sales have tripled in the past couple of weeks with a few small tweaks, which is great. My goal has been to develop some kind of a simple white paper or a newsletter that goes out to tell people how they can better manage their storage and also come up with some neat ways that Rebyte systems, basically passing along case studies. But that's not really that's the little background. So what I'd like to know is right now I'm one of the people who use, you know, the Google toolbar. I turn off all pop-ups. So pop-ups are ineffective for a guy like me and a lot of the people who I think are buying our systems right now, which I would regard are essentially enthusiasts. They're savvy. They know how to do this. So I'm curious, are there any good technologies that are non-pop-up related but effectively do the same from a technical point of view that work? I see the layered tool, I would imagine, works and gets around the pop-up stuff because it's just basically making something appear. But from a technical perspective, are there any other solutions that work?
Well, the two best ones that we found are the ones we're talking about now. The rollover is good for that precise reason. It typically evades those things that kill pop-ups because it isn't the same beast. It accomplishes the same job, but it does it in a much more unobtrusive way. But I think your first and best choice for that, Mike, is the rollover trigger.
Okay.
I do think that there's a place.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, you got another. Does that answer your question?
That answers that one. The second part is what I was leading towards, which is, you know, on our site, again, you know what we sell. I think you've got a good sense on who we sell to. In your opinion, do you think it's a wise choice and a wise move to add a subscription tool to our site, knowing that really what we're doing is we're selling a product to these people? Do you think they're going to want to subscribe to something, and would that be seen in a positive light, in your profession?
I don't know if subscription is the right. I will say this for those of you that are retailers. There's a lot of struggling publishers out there who aren't making any money who would make great targets for a joint venture together where you combine their content with your offering. And if you can do that, or if you have the capacity to develop truly useful information, then I recommend that you consider that as a tool for building a community of buyers who work and are interested in what you have to offer. In your case, Mike, I wouldn't recommend a subscription. I would recommend, though, email capture, but it can be for a variety of reasons. It can be that you could use the sweepstakes approach. You could use the the white paper approach. You could use some format that will allow you to capture an email address, and if you're going to use it in a way different than what you're capturing it, you can put a checkbox for permission in the form if necessary. But the bottom line is you don't have to have an e-zine or a publication in order to ask for those email addresses and get them. But once you have those email addresses, you want to have a reason to talk with them. And typically your frequency that seems to be minimal is about twice a month. You can sometimes get away once a month with offers, but when you get, if you're not consistent, they don't know who you are and you get filtered out as junk.
Right.
And so, you know, that I would look for something valuable that the customer, the consumer wants that you can offer them that'll help them.
Yep.
I would also look for strategic alliances with the right group that you know, has quality core content or information. And you can find those both online and offline. Sometimes your better sources are offline because there are obscure trade publications written that, you know, nobody else is reading, and they're quite happy to do something with you.
Yep.
Let's look at the exit pop-up. I still like an exit pop-up. It still works. And I'm going to show you one that we used and use, and it works. And you'll still find major publishers like Marketing Sherpa that use it. I want to tell you how to use it in a way that makes sense. It's different than the way most exit pop-ups are used, and yet most of us have heard of this. But I'll tell you one thing. We had the hardest time on the Internet finding true scripts that we trusted that worked, and then we had to take some things, modify them, and put together something that was effective. So the second solution is a pop-up, but it's different in a fundamental way. Number one, it pops up only once for a single IP address. This reduces the annoyance factor. You can set it so that it pops up once every 30 days or once every 90 days or something of that nature. Did someone say something? Okay, number two, it pops up on an exit. This is very important as it allows you to sequence. Now, hear me on this, to sequence the order of offers a visitor receives. Too often site visitors are presented with the wrong offers in the wrong order. And this can undermine your objective. In the future, we'll release a research brief on message sequencing. Just in the meantime, remember that a visitor's iPad and decision-making sequence are critical factors in the overall success of your site. Now, we control what a visitor sees first, second, and third in your site when we're doing this type of work with five elements: size, position, color, shape, and motion. Those five elements, design elements, help us to control what you see first, second, and third on a page. Many of you would benefit by printing your page and saying, what is the objective of this page, and then marking on it what you want them to see first, second, and third, and then looking at it and asking friends to say, what do you see first, second, and third? And you'll find many times that people are seeing the wrong elements in your design first. Now, I don't want, let's suppose that we're selling some particular product. I do not want the first thing they see then is an email pop-up to blast them in the face right in the center of the screen before I've had a chance to get them to click through to the item I want them to purchase, because the best way to get their email address is to get a purchase. But if they don't purchase, I don't want to lose them either. So it's important to ask yourself, what is the objective of this page? Remember, you make no money on a homepage until you get a click. So it's a question of, what do I want first? And in most cases, the first objective is to click through to a product that's on feature, or to click straight through into a section and then a product. However, remember that every time they have to click, you typically lose 50% of your visitors. So if your product's four layers deep, you've just lost a lot of people before they get there, which is why the items featured on your homepage will typically outsell sometimes as much as 4-to-1 anything else in your site. So my first thing is to put something right there, right away, they can buy. If not that, then I want their email address. And that's where I use an exit pop-up. And if you look at this page that we use as an example, Cliff, I'll let you find the code on this. This is quite easy to implement. We've worked hard on this script, modifying and getting it right for us. You can, on exit pop-up, the best way to see the on exit pop-up right now is, if you're on the example page, is to go to, you know, click off that page, go to Google or go somewhere and look at the pop-up, and then come back with your back button. So I'm personally going to Britannica.com off that page, and just as I do, it should trigger a pop-up. Now, I think in your case, Cliff, shouldn't that pop-up happen for them anyway? Yeah. Shouldn't they get the pop-up? It doesn't just is this sample pop-up designed to appear once every 30 days, or is it will it pop up every time for them?
I believe it's set for zero right now.
Okay, because I didn't get my pop. Are people seeing the pop-up? Are you guys getting the pop-up?
No. Let me go to the sample real quick.
Yes, I'm seeing it.
Okay.
I
for some reason
anyone
did
not seeing it.
Not seeing it, but is that because Google Toolbar might be blocking it?
If you hold down the control key while you click off, you should see it.
Try holding down your control key get a clean. There you go, and you should see it. You'll notice, by the way, how we design an exit pop-up. You'll see the statement about privacy policy. You'll see the benefits done in specifics, clean specifics, deep numbers, no adjectives that aren't quantitative. And the only time there's an adjective on that pop-up that's not quantitative, like it's real, detailed facts, figures, it's a quote from somebody else who's respected. I do not believe you should brag about yourself in your site copy. Let somebody else brag about you. You state the facts and give them a decision tool and respect the fact that nobody likes somebody's personality who brags about themselves, especially in vague, fuzzy ways that nobody really trusts or believes to begin with. This is an example of a very effective pop-up, and you're welcome to follow the concept. It can be improved better. In fact, I see a couple things I do differently right now. It needs to ask for the email address. These pop-ups change frequently because of different tests. This one would be better if it had those facts up there. And in fact, there's a piece of it missing. My staff needs to notice this. There's a piece of this, and it may be because of a test, but it should be telling you what it is you're subscribing to, and it should ask you to subscribe. Other than that, everything else is correct. So there's an example. Cliff, you want to explain? You may want to hit your back button now and go back to the code, and Cliff will comment on that for you. Go ahead, Cliff.
Okay. This one is quite simple. It's much more self-contained than the other one. All you have to do is place the code either in your head tags or an external JavaScript file. You can set the number of days for which it to expire. If you look down, if you're on the window itself, you look down probably 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 populated lines, and you'll see var exp days equals, you can just change the number in there for how many days you want it to last. You go down from there, you can change the width and the height and location and all those things in the toolbar. The only thing you have to be careful about is when you're placing, you need to place on in the body tag once again, you need to place the on-unload trigger with the check count, and you'll see that up there in the notes in the box there. Body tag example, and it gives you an example there, body tag, and starts with it opening and closing. And it goes on and add the on-click exit false to any internal links. The reason it's added to internal links as opposed to external links is that if you run them, it would be easier to put them, at least on our site, it would have been much easier to put them on external links because we have far more internal links than external. But the problem is when you go to close the browser, it wouldn't work properly, so they put on all the internals. And so what you have to do is go through your site. It can be a little time-consuming but worthwhile to add the on-exit code string into every internal code string for the link. And there's an example of it right there in the notes, in the comments for the notes there. And then it's good to go. And you just have to call to which, and then you see also just below the comments there in the notes, and just below the expiration period, you see var page equals, and you put in the link string for the page that you want it to open up on pop up on the when you exit. And so it's quite simple. I had to go in and modify it. I took it from a script site, but I had to modify it to work the way we needed it to work. So, and incorporate it with a pop-up layer. So,
interesting. Okay. Do you have any questions about what Cliff has done in terms of that pop-up script or implementation? Any questions? And any questions about exit pop-ups in general? Okay. All right then. I'm going to be
actually, I had a question.
Okay, go ahead.
You previously you were saying that with an exit pop-up that Google doesn't like pop-ups.
That's
so it, would this particular kind of pop-up classify as something that Google would not like?
That is correct. I would recommend you don't put, you know, you don't send Google to every page of your website. So if you're a retailer, for instance, here's an example of how you might do this. The landing page might not, that you send them people to might have the rollover, but your home page or other key pages in your site that are high traffic might have your exit pop-up. I'd use them in combination, which is why we developed both approaches.
Okay. Okay, and thank you.
Certainly, and it's a good question. It's a good question.
I have a question.
Yes.
Hello?
Go ahead. Yes.
Yes. On your page, you have the trigger in a graphic, and unless I haphazardly put my mouse over that, I don't find it. Have you done any testing as to whether hidden in a graphic is better or whether putting some kind of a text that more or less indicates that something's there?
Well, you know, it's so easy. You can anchor it. If we feel that it's not being... We find that most visitors' mouse slides over that section of the page. If, however, it's not, you can anchor it to multiple places. It doesn't have to be to one place. So, you know, you could anchor code to paragraph text in your opening, and it doesn't have to be a graphic. It can be the paragraph text.
Okay.
You can also have, you know, like you suggest, special information or something like that that people can slide their mouse over with a blue link underneath it. By the way, underline blue links get the most click-throughs. Despite all the fancy graphic links out there, it's hard to beat a simple underlined blue link for getting clicks. It's the clearest way to say to somebody, you need to bring your mouse over here to click if you want to see more. But in your particular case, with your particular question, I would suggest that if you feel like it's being missed, put it in multiple locations.
Okay, thank you.
We do it in one so that people don't bump into it too many times, you know. We don't just do it in one, but we don't do it too many places, just a thought, so that people don't bump into it over and over again and somehow that find that aggravating. But especially if you pop it all up in the same spot, it doesn't bother anybody. They don't even know if they've hit it again. So it's a good question. Yes, go ahead. We can't hear you. Go ahead.
Do you have any experience using exit pop-ups to recover purchasers who have basically abandoned their purchase or have left the shopping cart?
Yes. We've done a number of things with that. The problem is that they abandon the cart or the process in various places sometimes, at various steps. It may not be the first step of your process. So the way we address that, and we have a briefing on that in the lab that you may want to read, is that when they start the purchase, we capture their email, their address, and name. We have a little note there that says that this information is being used in case they have a problem with their purchase and completing their purchase. We have very few people that have any problem with that. It works nicely. We capture their email address. They continue with the purchase. If the purchase is not completed, we've written a series of two, at the most three emails that they will follow up with over immediately within 2 hours, one again 24 hours later, and one again about 48 hours later. And we captured and recovered about 4,000 carts with this in a recent test that we did. And basically saved 4,000 lost deals. Very, very effective.
So you're saying that as soon as somebody puts something in their shopping cart, before they're allowed to put something in their shopping cart, you ask for their email address?
We did it. I mean, it depends on the nature of how your cart works. I would say do it as early in the process as you can without negatively affecting conversion. In our test, they went to an order form. And step one of the order was email address, name and address. And to answer your question, yes, I would do it then, if at all possible. Just the simplest, and if it's worded correctly, and also if you have a good leveraged third-party credibility indicators on the page, such as the right testimonials about customer service, it doesn't feel in any way like you're making a sales move. What it does feel like is that you are trying to make sure they get service properly. The tone of our emails, by the way, when we do this, are completely different. They are. We do not use emails that are sales-oriented. Hey, it's still time. You know, it's time to come back and make your purchase before it's too late or this or that. We don't do that at all. It's the email, the tone of the first email is, we noticed that you were unable to complete your order. Was there a problem with our server? Is there anything we can do to help? Please let us know. Customer service standing by. Click here on this link, and we've preserved your order and your card. You can click here to return. Boy, that brings a lot back just like that. The second one changes slightly in tone. And I think we've released a briefing. Brian, have we released a briefing on this?
I believe so.
Yeah, I think there's a recent briefing in the lab on how we do this.
Okay, that's great. So all the notes are in the lab somewhere.
Yes, yes. They'll be recent, and it'll be brief. And I'll just tell you this, too. We're leaving so much money in the card that you can recover if you apply the system. And for those of you that might be Yahoo Store merchants, we're working right now to build a tool that will work through the Yahoo Store to do this for you, because we just think it's so important. People don't need to spend 30% more in Google when they can get 30% more orders at home without spending any more. Go ahead. Question?
I'm going to say that report is called Abandoned Order Recovery, and you can find it in the members section of the lab.
Abandoned Order Recovery in the member section of the lab.
Abandoned order recovery. Okay.
That's it. Any other questions?
I just had a quick question about when you were saying that is it the Google search engine that doesn't like pop-ups, or the Google AdWord that doesn't like pop-ups?
AdWords.
AdWords. Okay, great. Thanks.
And the other may not like it either, but AdWords will get you disallowed.
Okay, thank you.
All right. I think I'm going to bring this to a close. I want to thank you. Before I do that, have you found this information helpful, and do you like having these briefings in addition to the reports that we send out? Do you find this a helpful way to learn? Somebody talk.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Okay.
This makes it about 300% better than just the report.
I appreciate that very much.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, me too. Absolutely helpful.
Excellent. All right, well, I thank you. I thank you for your trust. I'll let you know about this May conference. It's going to be really neat. We want you to bring your problems with you in terms of marketing so that we can keep it very small and work with you on it. And in the meantime, get ready for the next clinic where we'll talk about your blueprints and things like that. Thank you all.
Thank you
very
much.
We will look forward to talking to you.